On this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll start out with a new way you can get more involved in the political process. In the news, we'll hear about voter fraud arrests piling up in South Texas, as well as a trio of stories about political misbehavior. We'll sit down with Derek Ryan of Ryan Data and Research and crunch the numbers on voter turnout. And we'll conclude with a commentary from Carrie Cheshire that Catholics in our audience will definitely want to hear. Welcome back, friends, to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. Before we get started with the news this week, I wanted to pull in Zach Maxwell, Coalition Director with Empower Texans, to talk about our Texas Torchbearers program and a specific opportunity that's available to folks out there. Zach, thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about the Torchbearers program. What is it?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Tony. So the Texas Torchbearer program is a relatively new program with Empower Texans, where we are giving citizens the tools necessary to pick up the torch of freedom and go out there and engage your community, engage your local elected officials and your state officials, and, you know, get some stuff done.
Basically, how to be effective and engaged in the process. And
that's
one
right.
of the things that we're focusing on over the next couple weeks, headed into Election Day and a few days past there, is the precinct convention process. So there's a big push on the website. Tell us about that push.
Yes, sir. So everybody can go to empowertexans.com. On the front page, you'll see a link to where it'll give you all the details necessary to be able to engage in your local precinct convention. You know, obviously, we're a conservative organization, so most of those are going to be involved in the Republican Party precinct convention.
But it's both parties.
But,
both
yeah.
parties do this process. It's basically the building blocks of the Republican-Democratic parties is these precinct conventions, the way you
right.
get involved there and you kind of work your way up. Tell folks kind of what are some of the things that are handled at the precinct convention.
Sure, yeah. So like you said, it starts at the precinct convention, and most of them will be on election day at your polling location or somewhere else. And if you go onto this website, you can find out, and I will help you find where your precinct convention is.
You have a form there, and people can sign up and kind of get information.
That's right. And so this is the first step in formulating the party platform that all the elected officials that run in those specific primaries. That's the reason why we have the primaries. It's where that way that we the people can stand up and say, this is what we want out of our party's platform.
So basically, if you're sitting at home and you're frustrated and you say, look, I don't like the way the government's handling things. I don't like the way my state government, my local government, my national government is going. I want to make a difference. I want to make a change. This is kind of the first building block step of impacting that process in a very real and tangible way.
That's right. And what you actually do when you get there is you will actually file a resolution. You can file many resolutions if you want to change the platform. And, you know, as a matter of fact, email us, you know, on that form, and we'll actually send you some sample resolutions that you can file and look at and maybe even write up your own.
So basically, if you feel that the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, for that matter, is not outspoken enough on an issue that concerns you, let's pick one, toll roads, immigration,
property tax reform,
these kind of things, you can say, hey, I want my local community to pass a resolution saying this is what the Republican Party ought to be about, or this is what the Democratic Party ought
That's
to
right.
be about. Well, I appreciate you doing this. Tell listeners again, where can they find the information about being involved in the Torchbearers program and being involved in this push around precinct conventions?
You can go to empowertexans.com. Should be up on the front page, you know, carrying the torch of freedom. Go onto that form and fill it out, and I'll be in touch with you.
Okay, thanks, Zach.
Thank you very much.
Now let's get to the news. We'll get started with Aaron Anderson with Texas Scorecard. Aaron, you've got a story up about some arrests related to voter fraud in South Texas. Tell us about those.
That's right, Tony. There have been several voter fraud arrests made in the Rio Grande Valley, specifically in Starr County. Most recently, four people were arrested for illegally voting back in 2016 while they were ineligible felons. And also three people so far have been arrested for mail ballot fraud in Starr County. Two politicaros who have been collecting up mail ballots and in some cases claiming that voters are disabled when they are not. And in at least one instance, submitting a mail ballot application for a voter who's already deceased.
Well,
so seven arrests so far.
So the change here, what's precipitating this is a change in law from the last legislative session. The legislature increased the penalties from a misdemeanor to a felony for these kind of violations of the election laws. And you've got the DA there very aggressively investigating these things and actually catching these crooks in the act.
That's right. District Attorney Omar Escobar is very diligently looking into mail ballot voter fraud, specifically in regards to that new law you mentioned that makes it a state jail felony to provide false information on a mail ballot application or to submit applications without the voter's permission. So that's kind of the stock and trade of the vote harvester or politiquera, as they're known down there in the valley. And Escobar is working also with the Starr County Special Crimes Unit, who's been able to go door-to-door and speak directly to voters as these questionable applications are coming into the elections office and complete their investigations and make some arrests.
Yeah, and so I mean, I guess the question here is, how are these people, you know, you mentioned felons going to vote, how are they actually on the rolls to vote? How does that even occur?
Well, that was actually a separate problem, Tony, of the Starr County voter rolls not being properly maintained, and that made them the subject of a federal lawsuit, not complying with the National Voter Registration Act, keeping those voter rolls clean. So they've been under a lawsuit since 2016, and they've got a new elections administrator in who's been looking more closely at those voter rolls, getting ineligible people like felons, like non-citizens, like deceased people off the rolls, and cross-checking that now with our primary elections with voters who are sending in mail ballot applications and finding some questionable activity there.
Well, it sounds like this is the kind of activity that we really would expect out of our prosecutors to really go in and investigate and go after these things. This is really what we really need to see everywhere in the state is aggressive enforcement and investigation of these things. Thanks for your reporting on this, Aaron.
Absolutely, Tony.
Next, I wanted to pull in Brandon Walton's Capital Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard to talk about a trio of stories involving political misbehavior by state officials. Let's start with the biggest one, State Senator Carlos Uresti, now convicted felon. Carlos Uresti, tell us about that.
Yes, State Senator Carlos Uresti, Democrat senator out of San Antonio, finally convicted of 11 counts of securities fraud in a federal trial earlier this week.
Yeah, and so basically, allegation there from the feds was he was defrauding his clients. He's an attorney, defrauding his clients out of their money, money laundering, other things going on. Not finally convicted. He's still going up for appeal, but there are some calls now for him to resign.
Yeah, so Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick quickly stepped in. After that verdict, he stripped the senator, Senator Uresti, of his committee appointments. The Senate Democrat Caucus, the group of Democrats in the Senate, put out a statement saying it was time for him to resign.
Yeah, this is a little stronger. The party, Democratic Party, initially was like, well, maybe he needs to look at whether he can do his job.
You know, exactly.
And they finally kind of come to their senses and say, all right, this guy's convicted of 11 counts of fraud. He probably needs to resign. He hasn't been sentenced yet. We don't know if he's going to the pokey, but looks like it.
Yes, we don't know if he'll be forced to give up his seat. Each of these 11 counts, each carries a maximum 25-year sentence. So he could be going away for a long time.
All right, now switching gears. Let's move east, talk about State Representative East of the Houston area who is accused or has done some bad behavior, maybe criminal, actually, probably not, certainly bad behavior. Tell us about that.
Certainly unbecoming. State Representative Ernest Bales, a representative in the Southeast Texas area, was called out by a constituent on Facebook for misrepresenting his own record on pro-life issues.
Yeah, he had a very low score on the pro-life index from Texas Right to Life. You know, one of the lowest scoring Republicans, yet he's out there saying, I'm 100% pro-life, I'm Mr. Pro-Life, I'm all the big issue in the race because he's being challenged from the right by Emily Kebido Cook, the general counsel for Texas Right to Life. So pro-life issues obviously becoming a big part of the discussion there. And he's saying, hey, I'm Mr. Pro-Life. His constituent says, hey, that's not true. Look at these votes and that vote and these other things. And how did he respond?
Well, he responds by essentially threatening the constituent with his own job. He says, I know where you work. I'm a customer there. Maybe you should reconsider.
Yeah, and then tags the guy's boss in it. Hey, boss man, notice that your guy is critical of me. Maybe you need to rough him up for me or something. Certainly not the kind of behavior you would expect out of a state representative.
Certainly very unbecoming from a state representative. Absolutely.
Now, speaking of unbecoming behavior, something we've been covering on this program for a while now. We had Beau French on the program several, maybe a month or two ago to talk about this scandal, really the dirtiest political attack I've ever seen in politics. And that's gone on in Tarrant County. This is Western Tarrant County in Fort Worth. You have State Rep Charlie Guerin running for re-election. He was running for re-election in 2016. This conservative businessman, Beau French, ran against him. He's now running against him again, headed into the home stretch here into Election Day. But the real scandal started last cycle in 2016, where you had an anonymous phone call made to Child Protective Services accusing French falsely, totally falsely, baselessly, of abusing his children, abusing his family, really just dirty, nasty stuff.
Some of the most despicable behavior we've seen in state politics in a long time.
Yeah, and so the French people, his attorneys, have been trying to take the deposition of the man they accuse of doing this, which is their opponent's staffer, this guy named David Sorensen, finally got to take that deposition this last week. We sat down and watched some of that video of the deposition. Really shocking, some of the things that we learned.
Really shocking. First of all, knowing this David Sorensen, this was Guerin's longest-serving staffer at the time. First of all, hearing some of his previous employment, I mean, the guy works for Democrats. He's working for a Democrat now. He worked for Democrats before working for Charlie Guerin.
And yet, nonetheless, he goes to work for this Republican, a guy who runs as a conservative. He's not a conservative, but this Republican state rep, Charlie Guerin. And we learn, hey, this is this Democrat operative. He's certainly the person who made the call. It's very clear from the deposition. He's instructed. He's got a Democrat lawyer, the local Democrat Party chairman, volunteering as his lawyer, telling him, hey, don't answer that question. Dozens of times.
Right. And what's interesting is how dissonant this is with the statement that Representative Guerin put out back in December. He said that he had knowledge of this.
He puts out this statement and says, I can shed no light on the disputed facts in this case. This is a guy who worked for a vendor of mine, this, I don't know any more than what I learned in the newspaper. Well, that's just clearly false from what we saw in the deposition.
Right. There's no way that Representative Guerin didn't know about these goings on.
Yeah, in fact, Sorensen testified. He talked with Guerin about some of the rumors that he heard and some of the content that ended up in this report. So very clear that Guerin has been covering up his involvement in this scandal, his involvement in this attack on his opponent's family, and he really needs to come clean to voters. And I guess we'll see the answer. We'll see the verdict from the voters when Election Day rolls around.
Exactly. Facing off against Beau French up there in Fort Worth.
All right. Thanks for your reporting on this.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the program this week Derek Ryan with Ryan Data and Research. Derek, you're kind of a numbers guy. You know how all of these things work from a number crunching standpoint, and you've got a lot of observations about what's going on with the Republican primary and Democratic primary elections right now. Thanks for coming on the program, Derek.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So you've been putting out these kind of daily updates, looking at the turnout numbers and who's actually showing up to vote in the Republican Democratic primaries. Tell us kind of a 10,000 foot view. What are some of the things you're seeing?
Well, I think from the Republican primary standpoint, things kind of got off to a slow start at the beginning of early voting. You know, I think part of that was bad weather across the state. You know,
sure.
our voters on the Republican side, you know, they go to work, and when it's 30, 40 degrees outside and raining, they want to get home as quickly as possible to their families. So they said, you know, we'll probably wait to vote, wait until it's, you know, the weather's better.
Sure. I'm just thinking anecdotally, it was nasty weather here, and I'm usually one of those first day kind of guys, and I voted on day three or something, you know? So, yeah.
Exactly. And I had a county clerk who's sending me these daily reports say, you know, sorry we didn't get the data to you the other day. We didn't come into the office because there was a freeze.
Yeah, right.
So I'm like, oh, okay.
but there's a bit of a narrative going on out there. Oh, Republican turnout is depressed. Republicans aren't interested in coming to the polls, and the Democrats are super enthusiastic. Is that what the numbers are showing?
Early on, you know, I could see where that could be the narrative. As the early voting period has gone on, each day we see more and more people voting early. So, you know, we're above where we were in 2014, and we're way above where we were in 2010. So I think that narrative may have lasted for a day, maybe 2 days, but that's certainly not the case now.
Yeah, you know, I think there's some of the thought on this election. We don't have a lot of really high-profile statewide races in the Republican primary. Obviously, Governor Abbott is headed to re-election almost, you know, not almost, it certainly. Lieutenant Governor Patrick has a strong, you know, strong path. His challenger has not been able to raise money. You've got a couple races, a race for agriculture commissioner, a race for land commissioner that are drawing some interest, but nothing compared to what we saw in 2014, where it was kind of the full musical chairs happening, lots of activity in the primary. Yet nonetheless, we're seeing a pretty similar turnout model to what we saw in 2014.
Exactly. And, you know, those first few days, I was a little concerned. And my first thought was, well, you know, 4 years ago, we had a four-way lieutenant governor's race with, you know, all four candidates you know, able to raise money. You know, they all had name ID,
right?
You know, and they were all contacting their group of supporters, getting them to turn out. So I said, well, if we don't have that at the top of the ticket, maybe we are going to have, you know, some issues getting people to go out and vote. And thankfully, that has turned out to not be the case.
Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the trends generally. So normally, it's my understanding that the voting kind of ramps up as you go through early voting, but then there's obviously a group of people who are still your typical election day voter. How does this, you know, generally look? What can we see in the last, you know, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago? What are people doing whenever they show up?
I think that you're going to see probably somewhere between, you know, 45 and maybe 55% of the people are going to vote early this cycle. So, you know, I'm one of those people that's a traditionalist that, you know, I want to get the mail. You know,
sure.
I don't want to vote on the first day of early voting because all of these campaigns are going to take me off their list. So I'm a traditionalist, and, you know, I'll vote on election day. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of people out there who are probably the same way. You know, they think that there may be some silver bullet that comes out. And so, you know, they want to be as informed as possible. So they wait either towards the end of early voting. And, you know, like you said, there's a spike as we get to the end of early voting, and then there are those that are going to wait till election day.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about what we're seeing in the numbers in the Republican primary. One of the narratives that's been pushed, and we've talked a lot about it on this program, is this idea, this culture of voting effort being pushed by left-wing groups saying, hey, we want specifically teachers, school employees, students who are typically Democrat voters, we want them to go show up in the Republican primary, to go strategically vote for the more liberal candidate in the Republican primary. And then, of course, they can go on and vote for the Democrat in November. Are we seeing any of that trend show up in these numbers?
Not really. Right now, about 2% of the people who are voting early in the Republican primary, 2% are previous Democrat primary voters. Now, 2% could be a lot in a tight race, but just to give you a comparison, in 2016, that number was 7%. It's not as high as it was 2 years ago, but I think the more telling number is people who have never voted in either party's primary but are, general election voters, about 8% of those people or 8% of the early voters come from that group. And that sounds like a lot, but then when you look at 2016, the number was 26%.
Yeah,
so,
that was,
there are some new Republican primary voters, but it's just not as many as I think some groups would like to think are coming to vote.
Yeah, you had so much enthusiasm. People who had not voted in a while, or certainly had not voted in a primary in a while or ever, coming out to say, "Hey, I want to I'd put my flag in the ground for Trump or for Cruz or or even some of the other candidates." This last cycle, not so much of that this time around. I wanted to switch gears, talk also about the Democrat primary and their turnout. Their turnout is up. There is some enthusiasm increase there. Tell us about that and how it compares.
Well, so I think one of the things that may be a concern come November is that if you look at the past election history on people who are voting early in the Democrat primary, I just gave you the number that 8% of Republican primary voters were, previous general election and had never voted in a primary. So 8% for the Republicans, that number is 19% on the Democrat side. So either they're getting, Democrats who have never voted in a primary, they're getting those people to show up, or, people are just showing up on their own. That number kind of pops out to me every time I look at these statistics.
Well, you're talking 1 in 5 of the people showing up have never voted in a primary or a Democratic primary before. And it's really interesting there. You're a former Republican Party, Republican Party of Texas guy, and obviously I'm approaching things from a Republican conservative perspective. So when it comes to the Democratic primary, I'm just kind of an observer. I don't really have a dog in it, or have a horse in the race, But when you look at it, it's really interesting to see how the governor's race is going to shape up, because they've had such low kind of paltry fundraising by these candidates that it's hard to say how any of these voters are going to know who any of these people are.
Exactly. And you kind of, like you said, we're kind of outsiders looking in, using our conservative brains to try and figure out the libertarian or the liberal mind. And, are these people, tied to a specific candidate in the Democrat primary, or is this more of, just kind of a protest vote, if you will, against Republicans?
Yeah, but at the same time, if they're wanting to show up to vote against Republicans, well, they have to vote for someone.
Exactly.
So it will be interesting to see how that works. So I guess the big, 10,000-foot view, big takeaway here is our electorate in these primaries looks a lot like the electorate you would expect, that people would be probably fairly prepared to see, which means it's relatively low. It means that people out there who want to have a say in these primaries, if you show up and you bring your family and you bring your friends and you bring 5 or 10 people with you, that can actually have a big impact in these elections.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, before we conclude, tell listeners, where can they learn more about this? You know, you're doing these daily reports. Where can they learn more about Ryan Dowden Research? Where can they get the reports? How can they learn more about the work that you're putting in on this?
If they go to www.ryandata.com, at the bottom of the main page, there's a sign-up sheet for getting signed up on the email list, and every day during early voting. And then after Election Day, I'll send out reports about who's voted in both the Republican and Democrat primary.
Well, thank you, Derek, for coming on and crunching the numbers a little bit with us. Thank you for the work you put in on this. I think it's a great public service, and appreciate your work on it. I'm excited to see how the election results look and what the predictions end up meaning.
Likewise, and thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks, Derek.
All right.
Next up, we have a commentary from Carrie Cheshire that our Catholic listeners in particular will be sure to want to hear.
The Texas Catholic Conference of Bishops' lead lobbyist is taking aim at the state's oldest and largest pro-life organization and crying foul over their endorsement practices in the ongoing Texas Republican primary election. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Carrie Cheshire, a pro-life Catholic and vice president of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Pro-life activists across the state were stunned last week when the TCCB issued a parish advisory statement effectively attacking Texas Right to Life for being, in the words of Catholic State Representative Matt Rinaldi of Irving, too avidly pro-life. As Rinaldi aptly and deferentially stated, quote, "While I acknowledge the role of the TCCB in defining issues for Texas Catholics, the advisor appears purely politically motivated beyond shepherding the faithful on issues of faith and morals, leading to speculation about the extent the advisory generated from the lay staff and lobbying team at the TCCB, rather than the bishops who would presumably extend a spirit of charity towards those whom they disagree. Indeed, the advisory appears to be written by TCCB's Jennifer Allman, who became the organization's executive director in June of 2016 and is currently facing her first primary election cycle since taking the position. Allman is closely associated with two competing organizations to Texas Right to Life, the Texas Alliance for Life and Texans for Life Coalition, both of whom who have opposed some of Texas Right to Life's efforts to protect life in the Texas legislature. One of them even went as far as to testify against the dismemberment abortion ban that was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott this past summer. Such an action is something that pro-life Texans of all faiths should be celebrating rather than litigating. Rather than focus their criticism on an organization which fights not just in the Texas Capitol, but in courtrooms across the state to protect innocent life from womb to tomb, the TCCB should be following the steps of their compatriots in other states, who have withdrawn Holy Communion from pro-abortion Democrats who claim to be faithful Catholics. Many of Texas's lawmakers, especially those representing the Rio Grande Valley, have cited their Catholic faith to push for increased welfare spending, but actively opposed efforts to protect unborn life, defend traditional family values, and expand school choice. Each of these issues is included in the TCCB's agenda, yet no efforts have been made to ensure that Texas Catholics know the truth about which lawmakers and organizations support those issues. To be clear, Catholics and Texans of all beliefs shouldn't be opposed to the TCCB speaking out on the need to protect life, defend human dignity, or for citizens to engage in the political process. But efforts to attack organizations actively involved in fighting for those ends do little to advance pro-life policies or to further the kingdom of God. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Carrie Cheshire.
Well, that's all I have for you this week. You know, early voting in the primaries is underway, and Election Day is March 6th. You can find all of Empower Texans' recommendations in the primary elections at empowertexans.com/endorsements. Finally, I wanted to invite you to join us back here next week for a very special episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. We'll be recapping all of the results of the statewide elections and the impact those have for taxpayers. See you then.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.